B65. Number 1B.
So that's a very good illustration, Marion, to show what, you know, how we can proceed. And perhaps when we have time, I could make with you, say, an exercise, a spiritual exercise, to show, say, for instance, now you know the chapter prayer from last year, Atonement Eucharist may not be yet so tangible. And take, say, for instance, the chapter on prayer, which we have done, which we have analyzed through the 7 by 7, and at the end, the summary with the Lord's Prayer, and so on, have done that very nicely, so that the chapter as a whole, now I say the chapter as a whole, don't say the textbook as a whole, so that chapter as a whole has given us last year already a tremendous impact. And I would say quite a different view of what prayer is, that it's no more begging and requiring and so on. So that with this chapter alone, which is, a self-contained subject, it's finished there. Afterwards, she doesn't anymore explain prayer. So that chapter per se is yielding a lot. But if we go on, we see, but that chapter is only a chapter of 16 chapters, and therefore does not stand alone or uninfluenced by the other chapters. Somehow the chapter prayer must reflect in one way or the other all the other chapters. Can you see that? So, for instance, we could take, if we have time, or it's a very nice thing, take that chapter prayer which we know, and first see how we can see that chapter as a whole, and then perhaps blend it with the, let's say, with the 15th chapter, with Genesis, and say, how does the chapter on prayer get a much more powerful, much higher sense if we let the 15th chapter, say, reflect in the first chapter. And so we get again to a higher concept.
That's great, thank you.
Can you see that?
Yes, you just made it so clear.
Yes? Yeah?
Don't you have to, or isn't it a big help to take the structure of the textbook as you've given us and realize that prayer is but the word as the word. Now, Atonement and Eucharist, we're beginning to get a different aspect. We're not looking for the whole of the textbook, but one aspect.
Yes.
When you go over to Genesis, then you have a Christianity as Christianity. Then you can see how prayer in Christianity is Christianity. It gives you a basis to look for an answer.
Yeah. Yes.
Without that, you're just kind of floundering. You got something, where does it belong?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he just said it wrongly, but he meant it rightly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
let's say that.
Let me ask a question.
Yeah?
Then, working with the charts, as I mentioned yesterday, this is part of the whole education that I really need. If the individual who comes in from analyzing the word as the word through the proposition of prayer, and he sees that that isn't the end. That's
yeah.
Self-finalistic
yeah.
in its aspect. But yeah. You have to know why it's self-finalistic. So yeah. You're educating yourself then out of metaphysics to science.
Yes.
At that moment.
Yes.
Because you're coming then from the principle of the whole.
Yeah. Yes. You see, this is perhaps quite a good illustration that we can't, say, put our ideal too high at the beginning. That we say it's already quite a job to see prayer as a whole, as a structure. See? And nature does the same thing. See, in nature, you have the whole universe, say. Well, if we would like to analyze what that whole universe is from the point of view of the universe, from the whole, we wouldn't get very far. It's too involved. But nature is built up another way, which is indicative of what we are doing. Nature is built up of, say, electrons, as the smallest particle, electrons. Now, what does nature do? It gathers electrons plus electrons plus electrons, only as far to a certain limit and not ad infinitum. When it has reached a certain measure, it is no more a heap of electrons, it's an atom. It changes its structure. Electrons become then atoms. Then atom builds with other atoms together and together, but only to a certain limit, and says, this is a molecule. And it changes. You can no more compare a molecule with atoms. They are different things. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. They are completely different gestalts, different structures, with different laws ruling in it, with different purposes ruling in it. When you have molecules, then molecules build together with other molecules until it becomes suddenly, at one point, a cell. We call it a cell. It doesn't build more and more. It stops at a certain limit, at a certain level or so. And then it starts all over again with something completely new. It mutates. You see, it mutates into a higher frame of reference. Molecules and molecules, cells, then cell plus cells plus cells plus cells, suddenly an organ, a definite organ. And it doesn't grow anymore, or else it's no more a healthy organ. It gets cancer or something like that. An organ, well, the same happens there. One organ and another organ and another organ makes a body. The whole organism of a body. You see? It mutates again, and it doesn't say, well, I go on growing, 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 but it comes to a point of mutations. We can call it in the spiritual, either a spiritual mutation or a paradigm shift. And we must see that every time this mutation happened, this paradigm shift happened, the old is no more so important. And also that we don't get the new, this is important, that we don't get the new by extrapolating the old. Say, we don't get the new by taking the old and say, if I study the old more and more and more and more and more, and I put a lot of study in it, then I get something new. You don't. That's the point. See, the general attitude was, the more I study, the more I will see new things. You won't. You only see the old thing in a bit of different aspect. Therefore, the development of the idea of science, see, is not the question of putting a lot of work into it in the first place, as the only way. It doesn't work that way. You can have very... students that work like beavers have constantly their nose in the textbook, in the Bible and so on, constantly read, constantly study, constantly look up words and things like that. They will not be able with that method to make a paradigm shift. Is that clear? So we need something new. There is something different that the cells suddenly become an organ. That's something completely new, a paradigm shift.
But you did make the statement that when you were back at the very beginning,
yeah,
and we were building up,
yeah,
you said, but at the beginning we still had the gestalt. Each of those part is still the whole.
Yeah.
You see,
that's the difference. We'll come to it later on, perhaps over and over. There is a terrific difference if I build up from electrons and electrons to atoms by only seeing that they are the only thing, or by seeing that they are parts of a bigger one, of a bigger whole, not knowing yet what the bigger whole is. That's the difference between studying the ideas of the synonymous term by studying it, or by studying the ideas of the synonymous term with the mind of Christ. That's the difference. See, therefore, with the mind of Christ. Therefore, outwardly, you can do the same thing as the student next to you, and yet to do the very different thing.
A different result.
And with naturally different results, you see.
Which defines where you are.
Yeah. So that, you see, these are the tricky things that I'm glad that I come up, you see, that they can be seen always in their category. The category is the whole. If we leave the category of the whole, we are out. Therefore, even if we study the atoms, the ideas, it must be with the consciousness of the whole. See? I think that's what I said in the syllabus class over and over when I said, well, how are you going to study the textbook of the synonymous terms, finding out the ideas? Well, I always said, well, before you start studying, go through obstetrics, for instance, know that you can give birth to it. Always go first to the mind of Christ. Always are quite sure within yourself and be quiet within yourself that mind which revealed itself in the textbook is the same mind as that mind which is studying now, which is now my mind, that the mind that wrote the Bible, that mind that wrote the textbook is the mind that reads the Bible and is the mind that reads the textbook, then I don't leave my category, my absolute category. The moment I begin to study the textbook with my human mind, with an intelligent human mind, with an intelligent, intellectual mind, I'm out. I'm not in the category. I've left the divine categories. Is that clear?
Could you make just a small example of that? Working with the mind of Christ. In other words, well, I don't even know if I can ask the question. You said instead of just studying the synonymous terms, you know, DTM by DTM, you go to the mind of Christ.
Yes.
Which is the whole of the synonymous terms.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Did I get that right?
You got that right. You see, it's very different. If we open our textbook and say, I'm going to do a little study, and I'm going to read through some references on mind, trying to find out through which ideas mind is characterized. And you open the textbook and you read. Then you read it with your human mind. Well, can be very intelligent. But it's a very different thing if I don't open the textbook and first go to the divine mind and first begin to realize, until something within me gets at peace and is quiet and is enlightened, that I go and say, I'm going to study with the divine mind. What does that mean? It means that the divine mind, even if I don't know all the synonyms, I know that it is a divine mind, not a human mind. That divine mind knows already all. Therefore, it knows already what I'm going to study. It knows already the results of it. It can see through everything. Nothing can block that mind. That mind is the light which shines through every page, so that no ignorance within me can obstruct it. And I build up within myself that tone that it is God, the divine mind, knowing itself, investigating itself, seeing itself, being conscious of itself, that it's divine mind apprehending itself, that for the divine mind everything is already quite clear, quite transparent, there is nothing hidden about it, there is everything is crystal clear and transparent, and I begin to see what the divine mind knows about that study, not what I have to know about that study. And I do that until within me something is so at peace and so natural that the divine mind reveals itself in my study. It's not a revelation that comes from God direct to me. It's an attitude of the divine mind that can see in the text what really is in the text. We'll talk about that later on, about the various points of interpretation. But can you see that that is a difference? That I go out from, then I go out from the whole. Yeah? I go out from the category of the divine mind, not the human mind. Yeah?
Okay, then when you're capturing new thoughts, seeking thoughts or enlightenment as to the method of the science of being, right? When you start then with the introduction to the science of Christian Science, it automatically gives a place value to consciousness, a starting point from which to contemplate the synonymous terms. Because you're coming from that one principle, and then you trust it, which imbues that new consciousness with the idea that it's totally impersonal. It isn't going to be his or her thinking.
Huh?
And I think you almost have to precede capturing the synonymous terms from that standpoint, because otherwise they get lost, like you say, in a chaos.
Yeah.
Atomistic thinking,
yes,
about the term.
Yes.
And that's what happens all the time, unless you keep it confined then as to what a category is.
Yes.
So
yes,
you almost have to, yeah, define that at the outset, don't you think?
Yes. Yes.
Because you keep doing, you're doing, it's the tone development, and that tone development is entirely foreign to this
in
so-called intelligence, this human thinking coming into your midst.
Yeah.
But this is what, isn't this what you've always been saying about separate? We get the personal human out of the way, and at that point then we're able to do just what we're,
yes,
about.
Yeah.
And that was why you stressed that for so long.
Yes. Yes.
See,
you get the human out of, that's why I said, well, start with obstetrics, for instance, huh? Which, because that says, well, I get rid of all my human conceptions. Huh?
Then we are doing it.
I see.
Well, that enables you to be open.
That enables to be open. Huh?
But you have to know what a human conception is, Max.
What?
You have to define that for the individual. You have to know what a human conception is. What is a divine concept versus a human concept?
Well,
you have to analyze, uncover, and annihilate that?
No. No. No, you don't. I don't think you have to go as far as that. If in the obstetric it says that you have to separate yourself from all human
concepts.
Yeah. How is it the term? Yeah. For all human conception, that means that you go out from the divine conception. But you don't have to think what the human conception is. You go out from the divine.
It's not tricky at that point.
No. Yeah, Marty.
Max, what you were saying a few minutes ago, is that how the divinely objective becomes the humanly subjective?
Yes, yes, yeah, yes, mm-hmm. Yes. A bit.
Well, in your compendiums, or in a comment on the compendiums, you mentioned that the first time around, you're not going to get it right, exactly.
Yeah.
So if we don't know the details and we don't know the whole, no matter whether we start one way or the other, the first time around, we're not going to get the thing, because we've got to get the details and we've got to get the whole.
He's referring, I think, he's referring to compendium number 10, Love, where I finished the seven synonymous terms, and then I said that love goes back to mind. So it makes a circle. It's quite clear. How could we have a good concept of mind if we don't know what spirit, So, principle life, truth, and love is. We understanding is always the faculty of being able to discern and distinguish. How can you discern, distinguish, if there is nothing else? If you only have one, huh? You know? If you only have mind, and have not the faintest concept that there could be something like spirit or soul or principle, we can't get the full sense of mind. See? It's, you know, it reminds me always of that funny story I think I told you about it. And I met somebody up in State Washington. It wasn't Joel, it was somebody else. And we were talking about the state of Washington, Switzerland, and she said, oh, well, Switzerland, you know, Washington is the most beautiful state on the world. I said, yes, it's beautiful. Have you been anywhere else? She said, oh, no, why should I go? It's the most beautiful place. So you study mind, I was so beautiful that you say it's the most beautiful. I have it. I have the whole. Because you can't distinguish with the others. Only when we can distinguish with the others, understanding is that ability of being able to discern differences. That's why the second day is the day of understanding, which begins to differentiate. Yeah. Really, we got away from our real subject, huh? But that's all right. It all helps. We were actually going out from the age of today, huh? And said, all right, the age of today is the sixth to the seventh thousand year period. And therefore we could define it, say, as in the way of the big category of the thousand-year periods. And somebody else said, well, it is round about truth and love or so, which is a finer category, but still in categories. See, that you are allowed to do. You are allowed to go along a category and then see it in its subcategories. Just as we have, say, the days of creation as seven ideas unfolding, and then you can have the subcategories, and can have the first day in the three, and the second day in the three, and so on, which is a subcategory. So you don't leave the category, but you have a sense of the hierarchy of the categories. And that helps to order our thinking. Yes. Now, again, we come to the question that we had before, that we can evaluate yes, you say evaluate, see the true value, huh, of something only by comparison with others, by differentiating with another in that same category, which means that we only can value properly our present age when we know what was in earlier age the main thing. What was the main thing in the first 1,000 years, second 1,000 years, third, fourth, and so 1,000 years. So that through comparison, the value of one of them stands out much better, becomes much clearer. Is that clear too? That we need comparisons. But comparisons, and that's the thing, comparisons in the same category. The moment you begin to make comparison with other categories, it's no more scientific. You know? You know, I said another story of mine, I bring always the same old stories, sorry, but they seem to be simple, you know. One learned that at the university quite early, you know, that you cannot compare tall with blonde. Just because your girlfriend is tall and blonde, you cannot compare. But the discussion usually is that one person says, talking about the blonde girl, says, well, she's rather tall. And the other one says, no, she's blonde. You see, that goes on in the discussion on science over and over and over and over. And students are not aware how stupid that thing is. When I say, well, you cannot compare tall and blonde, you laugh, but you should laugh just as much when you hear and read these things, this stuff, where they just put all the categories in one model and compare them and see the complementary things about it or see anything of the same order in it. Or say, it can't be done. That's the purpose, first of all, to have categories that they are different, that we don't have to mix them again. Huh? Yes?
Could you elucidate on that beyond the tall and blonde a little bit, so we don't do it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I will do it the whole week. Yes. To see how one compares, yes, different categories and puts it on the same level. On the same line, huh, so to say. Yeah. All right. Oh, we have to have a break here. That's just at the right moment here.